All right. All right. Microphone checker. 1, 2, checker. Welcome, 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 fans, to the first edition of the Lockdown for 2021. I am Tony Covington. They call me T-Cove, and my partner in crime is the Ball Hawk.
You know how we rocking New Year.
You already intense, know. And Petty Hawk is always right on his hip. We have a special
with the guests we got today. I'm definitely gonna bring our Petty Hawk on their ice today.
Absolutely, anything less would be uncivilized.
Yeah,
special guest today, former Cavalier great offensive lineman Odey Obuchi. What's up, fam?
What's happening, Tom? I appreciate it, Ball Hawk. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Man,
I've been waiting for this ever since we texted chopped it. I was like, man, I ain't hollered at my man in a minute. I can't wait to reconnect and, you know, chop it up and make it do what it do.
Yeah, when I saw the name, I said, oh, he got him. He got him locked in.
I was like, Hawk, I got his number, but I think it's an old number. I'm a try. You know, when he hit me back, I was like, oh, my dude.
I don't think I've changed my number since I had it. So whoever got it out there still got it. Don't be using and abusing it, though.
There you go. Hey, come with a caveat. Hey, I ain't changing, but I don't mean.
Right. That's it. Well, fam, we'll take it back. We'll take it back to high school. Zavarian High School. Mm-hmm. It Brooklyn Zoo.
It's Brooklyn in the house.
Let's talk a little bit about your career. You know, I'm looking back, offensive line, defensive line. Where did you play on the defensive line?
I was nose tackle. So I played nose tackle. I played offensive tackle. And then on fourth down, I was punting. So I was the punter too. Not many people. I got booked too. You know what I'm saying? That's low key hidden fact probably about the whole talent I got. You know, once in a while too, even now, you know, going into just finished my 8th year in the league, you know, once in a while when the kickers are out there, punters out there, I'll go kick a few. And they all get their heads looking at me all sideways. I'm like, that's just a little son. Like, you know what I'm saying? I ain't going to do too much. I'm not trying to press nobody.
Right.
So, you got
the big cleats on your feet, too. You ain't got the little punny cleats.
No, I ain't wearing no soccer cleats, man. These are full-on space boots I got on. You know what I'm saying? I'm making them float, too.
Wow. Yo, that's dope.
No,
see,
I got
dope.
The boot, too. I ain't pulling punches.
Yeah.
No technique, nothing.
Kicking somebody in the ass every time you kick the ball home.
Get it out.
Oh, that's dope. So, you know, junior year, 81 tackles, 7 sacks. So you was kind of doing the damn thing.
Honestly, I was just bigger and honestly bigger and better than a lot of the guys. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't even really try to give much of technique. I love to play, man. That was, you know, playing high school ball, that for me was such a release because I wasn't so technical about it. I didn't, obviously, like, it's high school ball, so you ain't got the best of the best coaching as far as technique and stuff, but I was having fun out there, man. I was just throwing my weight around, you know what I'm saying? It was working out for me. I never really looked for stats, you know what I'm saying? I just went out there and tried to have fun, man, and, you know, at the end of the year, whatever was out there.
But that's the name of it, man. Look, I'm playing quarterback. I'm the starting quarterback and playing corner in high school, and I want no technique out there, but you wasn't gonna get by me.
That's it.
You run my way. I'm a straight put my face on you. Yep. I'm gonna put my face on you, and you know that's
not illegal now.
That's what it was, bro. I could not play in today's I couldn't play in college because I'd be thrown out the game every week.
And I'd be fined in the NFL every week. Thrown out, huh? Like your favorite linebacker from Clemson.
I shook my head on that one.
When the block, look, I get the old boys just playing ball, man. When the block is hot the block's hot. You know, you did that last year in a game, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be, they looking for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing in the league, man. You know, they just should, the more they try to, I feel like, progress the game to a safer game, I feel like they retract away from like the speed of the game, physicalness of the game. I get what they're trying to do, you know what I'm saying? But like, a lot of it's just guys playing ball. You know, I don't think it's coming from a crazy malicious air time, you know. So it's stuck in the between that gray area of trying to be safe and, you know, trying to play hard. But
I mean, I honestly don't know how he could have tackled him any different though, Hall. If Buddy didn't spin, then it would have been a good tackle. And because he hit him so hard, and if he would have just got right up, nothing would have been nothing. They wouldn't have reviewed it. It was nothing. They didn't throw the flag. But I
was told it's just I think from my understanding, from what I've been told, because I was saying the same thing, they just say anytime somebody dropped their head, they look at it now. Yeah. No matter what, they just look at it. Like it's like they're trying to say the defensive guy from themselves. That's what I was told. That made me calm down. Like, all right, I guess I could chill out now. Because at first I was like, yo, God, he hit him in the ribs. Like, how is that targeting? Yeah. They were like, yo, he dropped his head. So
really, they're trying to think about it. Every time you go to brace, you drop your head. So
yes.
Yep.
Yes. I mean, it's natural.
Yeah, it's natural for it to clinch. But
yeah, because if you don't, and you don't drop your head initially, you're going to get fat. You're going to get ran your ass over.
Oh, yeah. That's going to hurt. You're going to need to get that tiger bomb in the neck.
No doubt. So, senior year, you are the number three prospect in New York, rated 4-star Rivals. You know, by and large, had a really good high school career. When it came down to colleges, who were the colleges that were recruiting you the most?
I had BC, I had Rutgers, I had Michigan, Penn State, Syracuse. Man, what else? Who else we had? I know we had Stanford across the way.
Mm. Okay.
We had Tennessee. I had a bunch of schools. And I think I was getting so much mail by everybody. You know what I'm saying? Virginia kind of came into the picture, I would say, a little late. Because I was originally committed to Boston College. But, you know, when that whole deal, when their coach went and interviewed for Jacksonville, they told me to fire and they let him go. So they let him go, man. I decommitted. And you know what I'm saying? Charlottesville, I felt, you know, it was between probably Virginia anyways and Boston College. Because of the academic standing of the schools and then, you know, the history of offensive linemen and putting them in the league. And at the time, you know, playing, you know, especially UVA, man, we had quite the factory at the time. You know, Brandon Albert, Gene Monroe, you had these guys coming out back to back. So, you know what I'm saying? It felt like it was a solid fit for me overall, you know, and then being at Virginia, you know, being a decent amount of, you know, time from the crib where people, my family could come watch me play.
Yeah.
Go get it. So it was a good little balance of everything.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Since you were in Brooklyn and you said Syracuse, you know, was a lot of like, hey, you know, just go right up the like, that's not too far.
You know what, real talk, it was like that with Rutgers. Rutgers wanted me super bad. Rutgers about 45 minutes from me, an hour in the crib. And they're over my house every day, man, every night. And I knew, like, I appreciated the love, but I knew I was going to go there, man. It was too close to, you know, to home. And, you know, I wanted to play, you know, not say Big East wasn't, you know, big time, but ACC ball was way bigger at the time. And I feel like better conference for sure. So Rutgers was pressing me a lot, man. They got hot too, man. Rutgers actually got nasty with me when they told me I was going to go there.
Mm.
Yeah, probably because like they so close. I'm pretty sure they probably one of the first schools to probably reach out to you since you're only 45 minutes away.
Yeah, and I think
Go ahead.
I think it was one of those things where he was just like, you know, they thought like, yeah, man, we're going to get this guy. They thought they had me in the bag. Yes. And then I hit him with the
And that's the tough part, man, about like in-state recruiting. When somebody only like an hour or less away, like a fan would be like, oh man, you should have just got him, it's right down the street. But that kid is like, yeah, you just right down the street.
I've been here all this time.
The stature, depending on the stature of the school, like you said, they got hot, but you knew what to expect from the ACC.
Yeah, exactly. Especially Virginia, man. I've never been really down south. You know, really in Virginia, anything before UVA. So that whole experience, Charlottesville, the whole countryside was such a huge difference for me. Coming, you know, from a city kid too, man. I seen nothing but concrete and pigeons for the last, you know, 16 years of my life. You know what I'm saying? So I go down to Virginia, and it's just rolling hills and, you know, people are nicer and there's a, you know, a laid back, you know what I'm saying? People are just, you know, more respectful. So it took a little bit of adjusting, but, you know, it ended up being probably one of my favorite places I've ever really been.
No boroughs. I played with a guy named Demetrius Dawson. He was from Staten Island. He was older than me, but I remember when I found out he was from Staten Island, of course, I thought he was part of the Wu-Tang. It was back in the late 90s. And was like, yo, D-Dot, what's the biggest difference between Staten Island and Charlottesville? He was like, hey, son, you know what I'm saying? Look. And he just started explaining like the boroughs and like you say, like the people, like how he would kind of have to look away initially from the person coming towards him. Then here you can look him in the eyes. Like I never was exposed to the real city life.
Yeah. That Southern hospitality hit too different. You know what I'm saying? When I got down there, you know, New York City, you walking by someone and say, hey, how you doing? You don't even stop. You just keep it. You assume it's good. And if you don't assume it's good, you probably don't even care. So you're just going to keep it moving, you know. And that's such a big culture in New York City. And then you go down to Charlottesville, and, you know, I walk by somebody, I guess I saw in class or one of my classmates. I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, and I'm keep walking. They stop and they start breaking down their whole day. Well, hey, well, I woke up at 8 o'clock. I got my workout in. Then I got me some breakfast, some Bodo's. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, man, like, I got shit to do. You know what I'm saying? I'm just. Mm-hmm. But then over time, I really started digesting, like, you know what I'm saying? Take a second to, you know, be in a moment, be present with people. You know what I'm saying? Don't gotta be. And it really switched my mindset. I'm honestly not a big fan of New York City even anymore. Mm-hmm. The rush and bustle, you know, once I got a taste of the South and what it's like to just be cordial and you know what I'm saying? Be in a moment for a little longer than a half a freaking second.
Mm-hmm. Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
So you, the academics played a big role. Obviously you were National Honor Society in high school. That was pretty big for you, right? That was an important piece.
Yeah, that was huge, you know, because honestly, I really wanted to go to the league, but I also knew, you know, the probability of me getting to the league and everything that comes with that whole dream and that whole reality of that situation. So for me, you know, I wanted to go somewhere where I knew I was going to get a good education eventually. You know, if the league didn't work out, I knew that I had to fall back on something that I could be, you know, respected about or feel respected on, you know. So going to do a good school, but a good program, you know what I'm saying, that had a lot to offer was probably the first deciding factor in any of my decisions to go to college.
Gotcha. And then you know, meeting Al Groh, and, you know, he had just fired his son as the OC and brought in a new guy, Greg Brandon, with spread offense. How did you see yourself in the mix? I mean, you know, some guys, you know, they leave high school, they get to college, you know, it's like, wow, they got eyes like saucers because they're like, wow, this is different. It's faster paced, you know, the guys are bigger, they're faster, stronger. Did you feel like you were ready to go once you stepped foot on campus, on the grounds?
Honestly, I didn't feel like I was ready to go because the game was different. There were guys that were, you know, I was going against seniors. As a freshman, I was running with the ones, you know, right off the bat. I didn't redshirt. So for me, it was definitely a learning curve. But, you know, one thing I felt like that helped me so much was, like, my confidence was through the roof. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, maybe it's the hype of the whole 4-star and the rival deal and all the other bullshit. But, you know, I came in on cloud nine, felt feeling like, you know what I'm saying, I belong and I deserve everything, you know what I'm saying, that this program has to offer me at my position. You know what I'm saying? So for me, although I would get – you know, freshman year, I would get got a few times and, you know, I had my growing pains. But for me, you know what I'm saying, that confidence never really withered. You know what I'm saying? Once I was able to get, you know, physically ready to play, you know, college football, I felt like it honestly all came really full circle for me. And that probably happened closer towards the end of, you know, my freshman year. And then, you know, training camp and, you know, into my second season, I felt like taking that whole off season really propelled me, you know, to kind of elevate my game. But yeah, definitely a transition for sure. As far as, you know, playing against, you know, men, grown ass men.
You remember reported as far as weight wise? Like, were you already, did you grow any taller from your senior to freshman year? Was you?
Nah, man. You know, my senior year, everyone's like, hey, you gotta be big. So shit, I came in probably 330 as a freshman. I was probably 6'3", 330. Okay. And then I realized that was the wrong kind of thing to do. That was the absolute worst decision I probably could have ever made, man. I was fat. I was out of shape. It just wasn't bad. So right after my freshman year, I got down that all season. I got down, I remember getting down to 280, 281. And I just built back up from 281 to like 310 and kind of stayed around 310, really hovered 310 pretty much from there on out. But yeah, I came in heavy, man, but it was the wrong kind of heavy.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, and obviously it was that you realized it, which is a great football acumen, because the result in 2010, you you were one of seven players to start 12 games. You started five at right tackle and the final seven at left tackle. Which one did you like better, right tackle or left tackle?
Left tackle just felt natural. You know, I played it all in high school and stuff like that. And so in general, you know, being at left tackle, being that stance to flip your hips like that just felt naturally for me. Especially that year too, I'm pretty sure coming in knowing that I was going to play left tackle or that I wanted to be a left tackle, I really focused a lot on the left tackle sets and left tackle movements and angles and things like that. So I felt like when I was going to be ready to play left tackle and I did get thrown into the left tackle position, I knew I'd be ready. You know what I'm saying? Although I knew right tackle, I was going to play right tackle, I knew ultimately I was going to be at left, you know, which they told me.
Right. And you went did it also benefit you going from a spread offense to a pro style offense because they switched up, you know, Mike London came in, Bill Lazor was now the offensive coordinator. Was that system better suited for you?
I honestly didn't really pay attention too much to the systems that they were bringing in. You know, for me, a lot of it throughout the league, you know, even now, you know, I feel like in general, there's only so many different kind of plays and you can run. You know, you have your power, your zone, tight zone, outside zone, you know what I'm saying? Your pull out, your outside zone. So I feel like for the most part, being it in that system first and then coming into Bill Lazor system, I feel like he ran such a very optional system where if the pass wasn't there, it was check run. It was a very optional, as if you always had two options on a play. You know, if one play didn't work out, you had plan B to alert it. And that was, for me, that was probably one of the first things I noticed about the offense is we got a lot of options, man. And when it comes to a lot of options, comes a lot of details. So it definitely prepared me, you know, moving forward as far as my next 3 years with it.
And who is your O-line coach?
So I had three, I believe. Ron Mattis. Actually, two. I had Ron Mattis and I had Scott Wackenheim.
Scott Wackenheim, okay. Wow, Coach Wack.
Coach Wack, who was probably the best coach I've ever had till this day.
Yeah, dude, that's a good dude, man.
Yeah, I owe a lot of my success to him, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, between Coach Wack and Bill and Jim Reed, those are two of my dudes, man.
Yeah, that's like the old school last of the dying breed.
Yeah.
Especially Coach Reed. Where is Coach Reed right now? Is he up in Boston?
I think he's in Iowa. Is he in Iowa?
I saw him somewhere.
Yeah, he's in Iowa.
Yeah, I think he's at Iowa.
Yeah.
Still doing the damn thing.
All fired up.
No question. So then after year two, 2010, you guys finished that year 4-8-1. What was the mentality rolling into that third year, that junior year?
We knew we had a good team, man. We knew that the year before, you know, guys had to get their feet wet on their new system with London and things of that sort. So a lot of guys were adapting, you know, between Grow and London, they both brought in two different styles. So guys were trying to roll over to the whole London deal. And that junior year, man, I felt like, you know what I'm saying, that prior offseason is probably one of the best offseasons I've ever had is training. I felt the best I felt, you know what I'm saying? Everyone's looked the best they've looked. You know, we've had a healthy team, especially up front of the offensive line, all five guys started all 12 games that year together. So we knew we had something special, man. We knew everybody just had to do their part and things will fall into place. And that's what we did, man. We just had a bunch of ballers, man. We had a bunch of guys to show up and make plays throughout the year, you know what I'm saying, that got us through games and and won big games. So, you know, that year, it just felt like the stars were really aligning for us as far as, you know, the potential we really had, man, with all the seniors we had that year, the older guys. Really.
That's real. Hey, and Coach Reed is actually at Boston College. Remember when we couldn't tell because we couldn't go on the field, but he's a DN's coach at Boston College.
Oh, okay. He was at Iowa before then. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, man, that's impressive.
Cut you up. Go ahead, Cub.
Oh, I was saying that's impressive, man, you know, to be able to have your full complement of offensive linemen for an entire season. That just does not happen.
Yeah, we were rolling dudes that year. I remember, we were mauling guys up front, and you know what I'm saying? I remember that year Rocco was just tossing the rock wherever he wanted. So We was having fun out there. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Wow. You know, you talked about how you guys was mauling. Can you get more into the helmet as far as like prep, like spring and fall, just understanding the fact that y'all started all those games together the year before, like when y'all saw different fronts and they would shift, how basically you guys could be on the same front versus somebody not knowing to check, you know, how is that knowing that you could just adjust to anything as a unit and how that allows you to possibly play freely?
Yeah, man. I mean, that just allows you to play with, like you said, freely and all the confidence in the world, man. Having a veteran group up front who's been there, who's seen all the fronts, who are able to adjust, who understand. You know, I felt like the guys up front understand the system, man. You know what I'm saying? We had Luke at center at some point, and we had Mahota at center at some point. These guys always locked it down in the middle, and then just everyone, you know, pulling their weight, man. Knowing their shit. Everyone, you know what I'm saying, not having to rely on trying to do another man's job, and just everyone coming to the table with, you know what I'm saying, with their gear and ready to roll. And that's something I felt like, you know, no matter what happened, I feel like at the end of the day, your team's really only as good as your offensive line. You know what I'm saying? And even in pro sports, I believe that, yes, as well. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that year having that experience up front, man, regardless of what was thrown at us, I felt like, you know, that really helped us play fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the results showed. I mean, you guys went to a bowl game that year. I mean, 8-5 record. Y'all put in crazy work, and you know. But I think one of the things that's been missing with UVA, man, you know, and you referenced just mauling guys. You know, having guys that, you know, straight up dogs. That's like, look, I'm gonna dominate the man in front of me. You know, I got this mentality, and you know, I'm gonna put you on your hind paws every time I can. And that has been missing, you know, from UVA for a number of years. And, you know, since you left, I mean, you know, I can't think of too many dudes that were like you at UVA. And I met you when I came down and did the presentation, and then I was the radio, my first year in radio, and then you and I just connected, you know, because it's like, I like the way that you play. And, you know, I think you realize, okay, shit, Cove, he keeps that shit a full beam. So I know he gonna give it to me straight up raw, no chaser. And we just connected like that, man. And I just remember just watching you and loving the fact that you just was all about whooping the man's ass in front of you.
I mean, and that's what it was all about. You know what I'm saying? Once I was able to gain that confidence, man, that, I mean, you were putting me out there against anybody. And for me, at the end of the day, I was trying to embarrass that man. I was trying to make an example out of him. You know what I'm saying? I remember how many times we played against, I mean, whether it was Florida State or any of these teams, man, who had these good pass rushers, man, I was telling them, listen, man, you can send that chip to the right side because I'm going to be right on the left. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. I'm going to hold my shit. And for me, you know what I'm saying? I always felt like that was one of the perks of the game, being able to go out there and really disrespect someone with no repercussions. You know what I'm saying? And that's something that, you know what I'm saying, drove that competition in me too.
Yeah, for our fans, that's what we call the dog mentality.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, nowadays, people, you know, like to call that, oh, you know, you do too much. But for me, hey, that's doing too much got me this far, so I'm going to stay doing it. You know what I'm saying?
That's it.
A public service announcement to where it just cuts right to it. It's like, ladies and gentlemen, that is what you call a dog.
Right.
Now back to the lockdown.
Oh,
yeah, because it's like people like, what do you mean? What do you mean, dog? I'm like, yo, he gonna whoop somebody ass every time you come up. You know, I have all kinds of sayings that I say all day. You know, the great American choke out. Okay, Cub, what's that? Mm-hmm. That means a corner walking up to a receiver and he choking his ass out at the line of scrimmage. He's not letting him get off the ball. He's not doing that. You know, what do you mean? Put your face on him. That means don't be down there trying to tie his damn shoelaces. Sometimes you got to go up a little bit higher to make sure you're securing the tackle. And don't be down there whiffing and blinking like, I don't really want this smoke. You got to want that damn smoke when you're tackling it. That's a mentality. That shit come from me. Under that left titty, you gotta be
committed every time, man. And yeah, I've seen too many guys go tippy-toeing down into some shit, and it never comes out looking right.
See, I got a new character for Cove. It's the new year. Usually I say, ooh, Black Jesus is out. Now I'm gonna say, ooh, Angry Judas is out. Put your face on. If you was in the locker room right now, Cub, O'Day, what somebody would have said in the back? Pause.
A pause. Hey, oh, man.
Man, you can tell we old with the stuff we say. They be like, what? My boy be like, whoa, time out. Whoa, whoa now. What do you say? And I repeat it. He be like, oh, my God, you said it again? I'm like, dog, you asked me to repeat it. He be like, no, man. You can't say it like that.
You're not supposed to say it again, though.
Yeah, yeah. I know, right? That's even worse. I didn't repeat it.
Yeah.
And enunciated behind it so he could clearly hear me in my pause moment.
Yeah. Hey, it is what it is.
you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah. And it's so funny because sometimes I catch myself and be like, okay, perhaps I could have worded that just a little different. It's all good. It's all good. Yeah. So, look, senior year rolling up. 2012, team had mixed reviews. What was the mentality going into that, to your last year, man?
So, man, just put really the, I mean, honestly, we wanted to build off the year before. I thought we were going to be great. I thought we were, you know what I'm saying, go bowling again. Obviously, shit didn't turn out the way we expected it. But really, for myself, you know what I'm saying, even going into that year, honestly, I wanted to just put the cherry on top of everything that I already been doing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Already been, you know, playing at a high level my junior year. You know, I figured out my training routine, you know, working with Evan Marcus was probably, you know, one of the best things I ever did. And being under training with him, and then, you know, going to my senior year, man, just being a lockdown dude, you know what I'm saying? Going there to dominate, if no ands or buts, man, I was going to go in there. And like I said, man, just stamp what I've been doing the last 4 years and call it a day. And I know, you know, by me doing that and me trying to be the best of the best at my position, I knew I was going to be able to help my team by just doing that.
Right.
So really, that's what it was, man. I heard all the chatter about the league and all the other shit, too, leading up to it. You know, so that motivated me as well before this season. But for the most part, man, it was just like, you know, trying to be where my feet are and just trying to be the best, you know what I'm saying, senior left tackle I could be in the, you know what I'm saying, the country.
Yeah. And how difficult was it, man? I mean, you know, you guys started that season off great, you know, 2-0, you know, beat Penn State, and then you dropped 6 straight. How tough was that, man, to deal with that?
I mean, it was always frustrating, man. Losing, you know, losing that whole losing shit never gets how do I put it? It never gets you never get comfortable with it, or at least I never got comfortable with it, man. Every loss, you know, every loss bugged me, every loss, you know, bothered me, every loss, you know, made me just almost to the point where it's like, what are we doing? You know what I'm saying? I felt like we lost that dog mentality a lot going into my senior year because we lost so many dudes that had that dog mentality. Yep. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, London, not to knock Coach London or anything like that, I felt like he harped a lot on, you know, more so of off the field issues than on the field. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And to being a good person and being all and then doing the right thing and being, you know, community representative and all this stuff. And I get it. And don't get me wrong. That's important. You know what I'm saying? And that's, you know, a point in life that you really carry throughout your whole life. But I feel like in the moment of where we're at in our careers as a program, we just didn't have many guys that had a dog mentality, and it really wasn't like preached like that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It wasn't really installed in us, you know what I'm saying? And it was more of a, hey, man, you know what I'm saying? Looked apart. I'm like, nah, man, forget all that shit. Like, go be a dog. Like, if, you know what I'm saying? I used to do things that try to make him feel uncomfortable, because you got to feel uncomfortable to start, you know, seeing some change. You got to start.
True.
You can't be doing the same thing, you know, the whole time expecting different results. That's called being crazy. You know what I'm saying? True. So, like, for me, I've always played without, like, within my personality and being from New York and who I am. You know, I've always had the energy, and for some people it could be too much, and for some people it could be, you know what I'm saying, awkward, you know what I'm saying? But I always try to put him in a position where he had to just see it from someone's outside shoe of just trying to always do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't get me wrong, right, doing the right thing is always the right thing to do. But when it comes to being on the field, it's, you kind of get a little freedom from having to be that right person. You know what I'm saying? I felt like we just didn't, that wasn't really preached to us as much as it probably should have.
Right. I mean, because once I step on that 52x100 and put that mouthpiece in, I'm a whole different person.
I don't care about nobody.
I'm an asshole.
Yeah. I ain't worried about no one's feelings. Mm-hmm. I ain't worried about no one's families. I ain't worried about no coach.
No.
You know what I'm saying? The only thing I worry about is trying to make an example. You know what I'm saying? And that's really how I play the game. Even now, man, even in the league, you know, I have the same way, man. I go out there and I really don't see my legs. I just don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? I go out there and I let it ride. You know, it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? It's a grown-ass man's game, and at the end of the day, that's what you're playing it for. You know, so for me, it just, you know, we could have had so much more direction to it's okay to be a dog as opposed to, hey, you're better off being a good student person, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You never win your games. So
yeah, and that was a part of the frustration that you and I used to rap about.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like, man, we're out here preaching to the choir. I mean, we out here need to go hunting. You know what I'm saying? We have enough of the talking. Like, it's about that time, you know, and that's something I felt like it fell over deaf ears a lot. And there's, you know, it was what it was. It turned out the way it did.
You know, listening to y'all talk about, you know, losing and not getting comfortable losing. He couldn't come up with a word when you losing repeatedly. I came up with a word because you know who I'm a fan of in the NFL. Don't be Doug Peterson.
Two.
Yeah.
Hey, why you take a drink and not say nothing?
All I said was, oh.
Oh,
don't be comfortable we're going to move up in the draft. Okay, let me show you what you missed the last couple of years of your draft and then tell me that again.
That was bad too, man. That was pretty bad too.
You know what I'm saying? The receivers we done missed out on? I mean, I don't play for them, so I can't say we, but Philly?
That's tough, man. Yeah. You know, and that's just a part of business. You know, people get to the league and they think it's really all about winning. Honestly,
no.
If that other night wasn't a pure example of what the league's about, then, you know what I'm saying, guys really don't understand it. Like, I thought in, you know, a few organizations throughout the league, you know, from what I hear, are about winning. But for the most part, a lot of the league's about, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's and making sure, you know, everyone's ass is nice and tight. So,
That's real, though. It's corporate big business. It's corporate big business.
100%.
From the jump, man, from the jump. Everyone's got to look good from their decisions. Everyone's constantly, you know, there's an eye on everybody, and everyone's always got to make sure that shirt is tucked in. And so at the end of the day, everyone's going to do what they got to do to make sure their shit's right. So,
yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I learned, man. It's like, A, it was corporate big business. And you learn that as crazy as it sounds, the best people don't always play.
No.
You know, and you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't, well, look. So-and-so make this amount of money, so he got to play.
That's why I gave that man that money. He better be out there.
Yeah.
That's it. They pay who they play. They play who they pay. Exactly. That's what everyone said, man. That's been, you know what I'm saying, that's a story a lot throughout the whole league with a lot of guys, man. Some guys, hot garbage, and they out there. Just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Out there. For sure. After that season, you are captain that your senior year, all ACC first team, all coaches, all ACC first team, offensive lineman of the year, touchdown club of Richmond. So you had a lot going for you, you did it. And so your prospects, how were you feeling about your prospects for going to the NFL? After you put in the work that you put in?
I felt pretty good. You know, I felt pretty good. I felt like I would have been in a good position to get drafted. You know, ultimately that was my goal. I wanted to get drafted high. And the year I came out, man, just happened to be a super crazy year with offensive linemen in the draft. I think it was like a record year. They were like 14 in the first round. Mm-hmm. But that whole year, was a big learning phase. You know, for me, I've never been a weight room warrior. You know what I'm saying? I've always, you know, held my own and been strong in the weight room, but like, I never was like the quick twitch, or I could, you know, jump through the ceiling or a roof, but you know, you put me on a football field, I have to play football. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's something I couldn't translate as far as like, you know, the combine. My combine was okay. It wasn't the best. Like my workouts were great. My film was great, but then like the combine numbers were okay. You know what I'm saying? And they're like, oh, well, you know, how's that going to translate? I'm like, shit, turn on the film, man. You know what I'm saying? If the film won't lie. You know, so that whole process of having to kind of like switch your mentality to like, now, hey, I almost need to be a Wigan Warrior to appease the eye, which at the end of the day, you ain't going to draft me to be a Wigan Warrior. You know,
right.
To play football. I mean, I know a ton of guys who look like Tarzan and play like Jane all day.
Play like Jane. Woo! So, like,
you know what I'm saying? So, like, that's something, you know, so I've seen firsthand translate, you know, from Virginia to even now in the league, man. Some guys look absurd, man. They go out there and they get their ass fucking mauled. So it's like, you know, saying, look good what you want, man, but out there, hey, you're going to have to play football, you know what I'm saying? So
that's right.
I was always confident in what I put out there as far as my film that I've had over, you know, my career and the games I started.
Mm-hmm. How was that Senior Bowl experience?
Oh, go ahead. My fault.
Sorry about that, Hawk.
No, you good. Go ahead.
How was that Senior Bowl? How was the Senior Bowl experience for you?
Senior Bowl experience was okay. If I could do it all over again, man, I would definitely not do it. I would just do the interviews because the whole time, man, the schedule is pretty shitty. You know what I'm saying? And it's not really a player, you know, prospect friendly thing. I mean, you go there and you just do one on ones for 2 hours straight. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. For me, when I went there, I never played guard, and I was playing guard for the most part. You know, they wanted to see you there and there. You know. So if I could do it all over again, I would have done an interview and stuff like that. I probably would have ex-nayed the game because no one gives a shit about the game anyways.
Right.
But overall, you know, the whole experience as far as prepping me for the combine, what was as far as interview-wise and meeting NFL personnel and things like that, it was cool to be a part of for sure.
And what was it like for you? Because you just talked about going through the Senior Bowl process, how it was one-on-ones for 2 hours. That's geared. It's like flip for y'all, right? It's more geared towards the defensive guy.
Yeah, that's the defensive
like
guy.
Ours, I mean, one-on-one.
Yeah, because then you, you know, we come to the game and there's not a defensive guy making a play, you know? So it's like, what are we really doing out here? You know,
right,
you
right.
Who want to just rush the passer at one-on-ones and wear tough, you know, leggings and all that fucking, you know?
Yeah.
So it wasn't really ideal. But for me, you know, I didn't know much better at the time. I was just hyped with, oh, yeah, Senior Bowl, you know what I'm saying? It's an honor. And it is an honor. Don't get me wrong, man.
Yeah.
I was excited to be a part of. But in the hindsight, looking back at it, and did it really pay off for me? Or think, you know, make a difference for me? I didn't really think so.
So how was your thought process? Or how did you take, you know, if Todd Machet or Mel Kiper or these scouting services are having their mock drafts and giving their strength and weakness, were they listening to you as a guard going into the draft or a tackle? And then how did you digest like weaknesses and then they pointing things out which you felt like probably wasn't a weakness?
Honestly, they had me as a guard or a tackle coming out, which I knew they would. And after playing at the Senior Bowl, I knew they were going to listen to me both. So it was whatever. But honestly, at the end of the day, man, those guys' opinions, you know, I never lost sleep over it. So that those guys, even till it's not a day, man, it's like, would you ever, you know, would a doctor admit surgery, you ever going to get, you know, an opinion from a plumber? Hell no, right? Is a plumber ever going to go get an opinion from a doctor when he's on a job site? Hell no, right? Completely two different things. You have one person who never played the game and who's never done anything besides sit behind a computer and, you know, punch numbers all day, as opposed to, and then you're going to have him go talk about offensive line play because of what he watches. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I learned early on, you know what I'm saying, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and that's cool. And at the end of the day, I mean, that shit was like, you know what I'm saying, it's like a fart in the wind, just gone. Like, I didn't even think twice about it. It's not like I saw it and I was like, okay, let me go work on my hand strength. He's like, no, man, I'm going to just go continue to probably, you know, perfect my game as an athlete, as a football player, as an offensive lineman. You know, for me personally, coming out of my senior year, I wish I would have just trained with a more O-line specific coach. You know, I went and trained for the combine like I'm going to be some sprinter. You know, that just wasted 3-4 months that I could have been training as an offensive lineman and then going to training camp ready as an offensive lineman as opposed to ready to jump a 40 or bench. You know what I'm saying? Like completely different thing. So if I could do it all over again, I would train to be ready to play my rookie year, especially now with offensive linemen coming in and playing, you know, sooner right away. There's less development in offensive line play right now for the young cats. So for them, it would pay off more for them to actually train for their position as opposed to, hey, the 5-10-5 and your broad jump and your vertical. Because, like, at the end of the day, you ain't testing that on Sundays. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You're out there playing real ball, and it comes down to your technique, man. If you don't got that technique, then it's going to be a long day at the office.
A long day.
Yeah. You might be fast, but you'd be fastly benched if your ass ain't putting your paws on somebody.
You know what I'm saying? That's it. If you don't got, it's such a, you know, especially at the offensive line position, man, it's a completely different mindset that you play with that you got to be prepared for in training that I believe that as opposed to the combine shit.
That's great info right there.
Yeah. That's fire. That's fire.
I would have never thought of not training. Like, skill guys, we always think we got to be fast, but you got an OG in the league that's telling young linemen, like, look, I ain't saying go out there and be super weak, but if you're going to have a deficiency, defer towards the testing and make sure you master your on-field technique.
Like, if you know you can play the game, man, you know you're strong enough to play the game, man, all that number stuff is – it ain't for the birds, man. I know some OGs in the league who's never benched over 300 pounds, and this is year 12 for them, 13.
Damn.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's not always about strength, man. Like I said, it's about the technique. It's the knowledge of the game, man. It's so much more than that at the pro level.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you can get away with it. But, Hulk, that's similar to, you know, a guy that plays defensive back that's not that fast. But the technique back in the is day. The technique is so solid. Yeah. The mentality and mindset is so locked in. You ain't got to be a 4-3 guy. Not when you can put them paws on them jokers. When you could choke them out at the line, man. Look,
he'd be all right. I mean, look at Richard Sherman. Not the fastest. Not the most explosive, but. He's smart. He's always in the right position. You know what I'm saying? That's 80%, 90% of the battle right there.
That's a fact, bro. We get too caught up in the underwear Olympics. Everybody want to see their name on NFL Network. Exactly. Oh, he's so fast.
They do that to you, though. They do that to you, right? You get to the combine, you got to walk across stage like a cow in your underwear and let them see who wants to fucking bid on you. You know what I'm saying? Some wild shit, you know? Like, I couldn't
believe
I'm sitting there in my underwear, first one, AB, too. My last name, AB, so you know I'm the first one up there. I'm like, it's hitting me like, man, wow, I'm really finna walk across stage. But a bunch like about 200-300 people just so they could size me up. Mm. Ain't that some shit?
What do you
remember? Honestly, in hindsight, I wish. I mean, the experience and the growth in the NFL has made me like this now. But you know what I'm saying? If I had someone to look back and tell me, man, hey, man, you know, I look back, I would tell myself, you ain't walked across no stage. You know what I'm saying? Fucking, you got me in a jersey and a uniform. That's what it is.
Sashay.
Right?
So, fifth round, New York Jets.
Out of all places, he back.
Back in the NY. I wasn't kind of going home.
Yeah.
It was dope. You know what I'm saying? It felt like everything came back full circle, man, after being gone for 4 years and just grinding and training. And, you know, I graduated early at UVA, so all my summers were spent at Virginia. I didn't even go home for them. Excuse me. Besides my freshman year, I believe my first year. But, man, it was dope. You know, I had the family like 40 minutes away. I was local. You know what I'm saying? I was able to, you know, move a little different in my city. In my city now that I had a little change in my pocket. You know what I'm saying? I was
having
a good time. I was enjoying the city. You know what I'm saying? I was living, man. I thought it was, you know, it was like meant to be. I had my family around me, like I said. I was at the games, and it was dope. You know, my family definitely helped me with the transition to the league, man, especially my rookie year. You know, everyone talks about that rookie wall. That rookie wall is real, man. It was like week 7 or 8. I thought I wanted to retire.
That's real.
Not it, man. I'm supposed to be going on Christmas break. I'm supposed to be chilling, posted up, and you guys got me here for another 8-9 weeks. Like, the fuck,
long hours too.
Long days. So, how did you feel about your time in with the Jets?
It was good. You know what I'm saying? It was short. The whole staff there was short. I mean, I got there for 2 years and they fired everybody, brought in a whole new regime and stuff like that. We weren't really very good. I had Rex my both years, actually. Rex was fun as shit to play for, man. He's a guy's guy. You know what I'm saying? He's a good dude. He cared about guys. But we just weren't winning, man. You know what I'm saying? And if you don't win, you ain't going to be there for long. You know what I'm saying? True. That's really throughout the league. So it was cool, man. New York was dope. It taught me a lot. You know what I'm saying, about being a professional athlete. It taught me a lot about, you know, the city. It taught me a lot about, you know, the things that come with being a professional athlete, as far as where you got to, you know, you look and,
right,
you know, people try to be around you and stuff like that. So it was a good little intro into the league. I say it got a lot of the rookie shit out of me.
Right. Good stuff. And then from there, talk about you moved on from there to Houston.
Yeah, so I ended up in Houston because my O-line coach that drafted me with the Jets ended up in Houston. So, mm-hmm. So we had that relationship there, brought me there, finished out my 2 years there, man. And Houston was dope. It was good, man. I didn't really have I loved the city, man. I hated the organization. I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of that political shit of hey, we drafted this guy high, he's our guy, and we gotta play him. And I understand that, you know, at the time I didn't understand. I was going to my third year. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm better than this guy. I should be playing. But then again, this guy was drafted by their own GM and just their guy. So, you know, played that game for my 2 years in Houston there. And I couldn't wait to get out of there, man. And from there, I, you know, broke out to end up leaving there and going to Seattle, man. Seattle was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Seattle was a good time, man, competing with those guys up there, Russell and that whole defense. I think it was the last year of the Legion of Boom, and being around Sherm and Kim and all those guys, man, taught me a lot about, you know, just guys who really cared about the game. You know, guys were just super professional about the game, who, like, you know, the game became life to them. You know what I'm saying? Not like their whole life, but like these guys were, you know what I'm saying, were cared about ball on a whole different level than I've ever really seen anybody care about. Okay. Yeah, it just kind of got rolling from there. And then from, I mean, I'll just go through it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then from there, I ended up going, that year I ended up being hurt, actually, towards the middle of the year, I ended up blowing out my shoulder. And then from there, had to, like, do a bunch of rehab, and I couldn't finish the year, and then ended up being a free agent. But that year, I had surgery late into December, I had surgery. So I wouldn't really be ready to, like, end the training camp almost, like, preseason. So no teams wanted to sign me at the time because I wasn't healthy. I was still rehabbing, things like that. So I signed with the Raiders, knowing damn well I wasn't going to make the team. You know what I'm saying? But I just know, I was like, listen, I just need an opportunity to play and show them that I was healthy. You know, that's what everyone wants to see, is you're healthy. Are you healthy? Is your shoulder healthy? So I was like, all right, cool. Like, I mean, I'll just sign with the Raiders. I'll ball out in preseason, which I ended up doing. I ended up going, I think I ended up being top five lineman in preseason that year. Balled out, got cut. Knew I was going to get cut, pretty much, and I ended up getting signed by a team that saw that I was healthy enough, which ended up being the Cardinals. So then that's it. Balled out there, showed that I was healthy enough that same year, and then that's it. Ended up in Detroit. And just finished up my fucking year there.
Right, How'd you like Patricia?
I loved it, man. You know, honestly, Matty P, him being a Northeast guy, he was dope. You know what I'm saying? He really cared about dudes. He really, you know what I'm saying? I know the record didn't show, and the whole Belichick system and that whole Patriot way is tough to emulate, and he came from that family, and I know there's a certain reputation that comes with those guys, man. But Matty P, I think probably was one of my favorite coaches in the league, man, as far as someone who actually cared about you. I mean, shit, during the pandemic, he called me and, you know, was checking up with me and my family, knowing that I was up in New York when it was the epicenter of everything. He called and checked in on me. So, you know, stand-up dude, man, that really cared, man, big family guy, that at the end of the day was always there for you, man, was always there for his guys. So I appreciated him a lot.
Yeah, that's dope, man. So 2 years in Detroit?
Yep, I just finished up my second year here, man, and just finished up year eight.
Okay. Yeah, and you're very active in that community, correct?
In Detroit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to be active as really anywhere, man. New York City as much as I can. Detroit, you know, here, especially here in this city near my mom is from Detroit. Not really my mom, but her whole family's from here, and there's a huge Muslim Arab American population out here too. Not too far. So coming to Detroit, honestly, I knew I was going to have my work cut out as far as me being in touch with the community and me being involved with people. And that's something I knew I wanted to do. And one of the things that I try to focus on as much as I could while I was here, you know, whether it's, you know, talking to the youth, or whether it's food drives we were able to put together, or, you know, I'm saying simple fundraisers and things of that sort, just trying to be in touch with as many people as you can, man. You know what I'm saying? I've learned, you know, especially throughout the years of being in the league, like simple conversation and a simple acknowledgement, really, just really most of our acknowledgement is something enough to really turn the tide for a lot of people. So try to be as available as I can.
Gotcha. Well, I know, so to rewind, because did that, has that always been in you? I mean, I know you were recognized at UVA by then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at the State Department for some work about a dozen Muslim athletes were honored at a reception in Washington, D.C. Tell us about that.
So that was just recognizing, you know, Muslim athletes at the time who are prominent in their sport. And for me coming out, you know, making all ACC and all those other teams and being projected to be drafted. I was there with Amir Khan, you know, Salah, another the boxer, a few other people. I kind of forgot their name. I know offensive tackle that's retired, something Salam in the league. He retired, played with Houston for a long time. But yeah, I mean, you know, just being a part of the group and having that acknowledgement and meeting, you know, Secretary Hillary Clinton at the time and kind of realizing, all right, man, you know, sports is pretty dope. You know, sports can, you know, take you to all kind of level and really put me, started giving me the notion that I really belong, you know, where in an elite group of people, whether it's athletes, whether it's being, you know, first, you know, Muslim or American, whatever it is, man, you get the sense of ownership of your fate as far as your career and who you are.
Mm. And you're one of the few Palestinian players in the league, correct?
Yeah, I'm the only one. I was the first one drafted. I'm the only one right now, you know, and that's something, you know, I'm saying a lot of people acknowledge. And for me, when I got drafted, I didn't realize that, you know, I'm waiting throughout the whole draft process to get drafted. And, you know, you got 32 teams. You can end up anywhere in the damn country. You don't know when you're going to get drafted. You have to just sit in there waiting with your backpack, like where it's going to be, you know what I'm saying? And so for me, that's the only thing I was thinking about, man. Am I going to have the opportunity to play professional football? Like, am I going to get drafted, et cetera? You know, and that was all I worried about. And when I got drafted, you know, a couple of days later, man, that whole other side of, you know, being one of the first Arab Americans in the NFL came out and that took off with its whole different kind of speed and wind there.
Definitely.
Wow. And how is it dealing with Ramadan during training camp, fam?
Oh, great question.
Yeah, you know, for me, I've always done Ramadan throughout high school. So for me, okay, it helped me a little bit. Kind of prepare, and then college. Ramadan moves back a month every year, so sometimes, okay, you know, it's not always during training camp and things like that. I think I've had a fall on training camp once or twice where I've been able to do it for the most month, but I've had to miss days because of it. And, you know, when mm-hmm. I do miss days, I'm able to make them up, you know, when I'm at a health time, because you're not supposed to put your body in harm's way, you know, to fast, you know. So for me,
right,
I'll have to do it and get through practice or whatever, I'd be all right. But, you know what I'm saying, sometimes if it's too much, and I go ahead and break my fast and end up, you know, making up the days. But for the most part, you know, I've built a pretty good routine as far as, you know, fasting, so my body's pretty accustomed to it at this point.
The closest thing I get to fasting is intermittent fasting, so definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, you know, the first couple of days are hard, man. But then, like, you start to feel a difference in your body as far as the cleanse. Like, you give your body such a break, man, from all the processing it has to do, from all the nonstop digestion and flow and things like that. So when you give your body a break, man, I felt like towards the middle of Ramadan, man, I start to have more energy. My body, I felt like, started running cleaner. Like, I was more, you know what I'm saying? I had more energy. I wasn't even really thinking about the food because, you know, your body, you know, you really, at most, when you get thirsty, but your body starts coming into a routine of, like, self-cleanse and digestion, you know, and then you cleanse the mind too. At the same time, you have a you know, it tries you. Don't get me wrong. That first couple of days of being hangry is real. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm the nicest person in the world. You know what I'm saying? I gotta take a step back and remind myself, you know, the point of Ramadan and, you know, the humbleness that comes with it and, you know, the gratefulness that of knowing, you know, where your next meal is going to come from. So it's a second to, you know, make you take a step back and appreciate you where you're at.
Yeah, that's dope. That's dope. And so you also have done, you traveled back to the West Bank, working with kids, and you went with one group to doing some surgeries or something of that nature?
Yeah. So we actually, I teamed up with Save a Smile, which is a group that works with cleft lip and palate children throughout the world. And at the time, I got linked up with them because my older sister and my younger brother are two residents right now, one in Pennsylvania and one in New York. So they got linked up with their group with a few doctors that they worked under. And, you know, I linked up with them and I was able to go with them twice. We went to Khartoum, Sudan, and we did like 187 surgeries in like a 7-day span. Wow. We went there, we brought all our work. We brought trunks of supplies, tourniquets, needles, triage equipment. I mean, you name it. We went there and we just banged it out, man. You know what I'm saying? I end up, you know, running the IV section and helping, you know, scrubbing on surgeries and stuff like that. And for me, I didn't know what to expect, man. It was probably one of the most humbling experiences as far as like you doing something for someone and then not expecting a damn thing in return, knowing that they got nothing for you. And that's something for me was probably one of the best feelings I ever felt, man. You know, going there and seeing people, you know, looking for you to hope, man, hoping to give their kids a chance. And that's a big deal, you know what I'm saying? Especially early on there, you know, when you have a cleft lip or a palate or you have a obstruction of the lip, you know what I'm saying? That's not always the best look, man. So when you're able to help somebody out, whether it's restriction of the lip or it's, you know, obstruction of the palate, you give these people a fighting chance, man, to feel confident, you know, to go out there, look for everything, whether it's going to get a job or, hey, you're going out there looking for love or, you know what I'm saying? Simply go get a job, man. These people, night and day, you see how they wake up from these surgeries, man, feeling like a whole new person because of really the chance you're able to give them to feel themselves, to feel normal, to feel, you know, like they belong and they, you know, they're not really outcasted by these deformities that they have. So at the end of the day, man, you know, just bringing hope to those people and them not knowing who you are. I mean, they didn't know I was an athlete. They didn't know I was in the NFL. They didn't know who Ode Ibushi was. They just knew I was a big ass person trying to help them. You know what I'm saying? And that's something, you know, that's a feeling I felt like, you know, that's something, you know, rare to feel throughout the world.
No, wow. That's definitely, man. I like just your outlook on life, like, you know, because you looked at it as somebody that's being, you know, that's in a privileged situation because of the amount of money you make. So how was just your everyday outlet and being so closely attached because of your siblings?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, growing up, we never had a shit ton of money. We never came from money. I'm one of 10 kids. I'm number 9. I'm second to last. So, you know what I'm saying? We was always sharing everything and being a part of the same thing and trying to be efficient. So for me, money wasn't everything. For me, money was ability to be free and do what I always wanted to do as a human, whether it was to give back and help people, whether it's to travel, whether it's, you know what I'm saying, to donate to certain situations. So for me, you know, personally having money and being, you know, financially stable in my situation just allows me, you know, knowing how blessed I am to kind of give it back and pay it back any way I could.
Yeah, man, that's fire though. That's fire. Because it's like, you know, the whole thing with, we're more than athletes, you know, and I think the consciousness that you have in giving back is extremely important because, you know, my thing has always been, I feel like I'm here in service. You know, I've been given gifts of ability to be an athlete, but I also have a voice. And it's really about how I choose to use my voice and share the gifts that I've been given. You know, yeah. As an athlete, you know, I ain't that special. God gave me those gifts. So then how do I celebrate him? You know, in you know, basically use the gifts, all right? Yeah. And then in turn, I have a life, I dedicated my life to service. And so anything that I can do to make the lives of others better, then that's what I'm called to do, you know? Sure. And it's, you know, sure. It's not all about getting money for it. No, it's about making a difference, impacting lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I teach my girls. And that's just how I'm going to always be. You know, good, bad, and indifferent, you know, and shit, that's what makes me move, man. Real rap. That's what makes me move. So kudos to you for that. Kudos, big time. So you got any kids yet?
I don't, man. I got married last January. Loving
okay.
It.
Okay.
It's working
congrats.
Out.
Really well. Congrats. How'd you meet your wife?
Through a wedding to my sister-in-law. We met and, you know, really didn't think too much of it. And then we kind of stayed in touch and it fell dry a little bit, picked back up. And then, you know, once it picked back up, it just took off. You know, it's not like I was really looking for anything. She wasn't really either. And, I'm saying it just happened, and things kept getting better. Things kept getting better, and it was like, man, I think I'm gonna get married. And for me, I remember it being probably one of the scariest thought processes in my life. Like, shit, I'm about to get married. Like, it's here. Now's the time, you know. And now that I got married, it's no big deal.
That's good stuff.
It happened organically, man. Y'all was friends, and that made it, you know,
I will say it. Less pressure to do a lot of shit that I don't want to do anymore. I'll be blaming the wife for everything.
Was she a Bridezilla?
No, she was perfect. Honestly, I was more.
She watching really, right now?
No, she's not. Thankfully, okay. She's downstairs. But she was the same through it all, man. She wasn't really too hard to do. I mean, my parents had. You would have thought my parents were getting married again. So they was having a ball with the wedding planning and all that stuff. So she was solid, man. But no, it was good. It was good to get done. You know, we were supposed to get married in April, but then, you know, halfway through the season, I said, you know what? I'm not trying to wait any longer than I have to. So we're going to move it up to January. And everyone was giving us shit for it. Everyone's like, oh, why are you going to January? Like, that's in the middle, you know, and everyone's got, it's a new year, et cetera. I said, that's no problem. You don't have to come. Don't get me wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can't right. Come. I'm going to be there, you know? Like, oh, it's going to be cold. I'm like, all right, whatever. Long story short, January 12th, it's 70 degrees, sunny and beautiful out there. Probably the nicest day in the year. And we missed, we beat the pandemic. So
nice. Where'd you guys get married?
In New Jersey.
In Jersey. Okay.
Yeah. So end up working out. And I, of course, at the wedding, and then a couple months later, everyone's like, hey, a good call. I'm like, yeah, uh-huh. I know it was a good call.
Damn it.
Yeah. It's me.
Exactly.
Right. But good shit. So I want to reach back. I was reading this little article that Matt LaFleur, Packers coach, was coming after you out talking about a dirty hit. The hell.
Yeah. So yeah, this guy, I mean, this, it looks like someone's child, man. This kid, this coach, we were playing Green Bay. I think it was like second or third game this year. And we were running outside zone, but the quarterback had the ability to throw the bubble, which is, you know, I'm saying, the ball to the receiver. Mm-hmm. And how am I supposed to see that? I'm running outside zone. So I'm running outside zone, and on my third step, I cut this guy, not realizing the guy, my quarterback, threw the bubble, staff threw the bubble. You know what I'm saying? So I cut him. So I'm looking up, and I was like, yo, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you mean? What are you doing? We're running. What the fuck are you not blocking, Scar? I'm like, why are you not blocking? You know what I'm saying? I'm out here blocking. And they're like, you know, the play is over. So it was a late cut, but like, it wasn't like anything intentional. Like, I wasn't trying to like end the guy's career. I was really just playing through the whistle. Not to mention there wasn't any whistle. You go back and hear the TV copy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because I ended up getting fined for that block. They ended up fining me for it. Yeah.
Wow.
So I had to call him. I was like, listen, like, you know what I'm saying? I was playing through the whistle, which one, there wasn't any. And two, throughout the whole block, it's not like I pick my head up and then I go back down and blocking. Like, my head's down blocking the whole time. So. You know, so he came out and he said his two cents about the article, but that just goes to, you know, people not knowing what they're talking about, just talking shit about shit. You know what I mean? You know, that's the fact of the situation. But then, you know, when you read the headline and you read, you know what I'm saying, his comments, you're like, oh my God, this guy went and ended some guy's career. But then, you know what I'm saying, you hear about the play or whatever, then it's a different story. But, you know, that just comes down to, you know, people, you know, that's 2021 nowadays. You know, you get to say shit without any repercussions. So
true. So, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Talk a little bit about the relationship you had with Michael Strauss back at UVA.
Mike, man, I love that kid. I love that dude. That's like my brother to me, man. I remember the day he stepped on campus. He was just different. You know, Mike, he came with this Miami swag, this Miami Vice kind of, you know what I'm saying, with the loud music and the layback hair, and you know what I'm saying, and that's him coming from the city, and then me be from the New York, you know what I'm saying, we connected a little bit right off the bat. I remember we met at the football house, and we were, you know what I'm saying, like, I understood he was out there a little bit as far as his style and his living, but for me, you know what I'm saying, I thought his energy was contagious, man, and we've been, you know what I'm saying, kicking ever since. We end up living with each other for the next 2 years. And then, you know, being best friends, you know what I'm saying? Really, he's been at my wedding, you know what I'm saying? When I saw him a bunch when he transferred to Richmond, and we really just been in touch ever since. You know, every time I go down south, I go to Miami, we check in and we catch up together, and vice versa when he comes to New York. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, we've been there for each other, you know what I'm saying, for a lot of stuff. And just building that relationship, you know, that's one thing I'm very grateful about football, and the fact that it just, you know, a lot of these relationships that I have with, you know, some of my closest friends I'll have forever, you know, if it's from football. So that's my dog, man. You know what I'm saying? Always going to be my homie dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, the relationship, you know, he's Jewish. And so is he the first guy that you kind of just like really bonded with that was Jewish?
No, I don't think he was the first. I mean, I've had a lot of Jewish friends in the past. I've gone to school with Jewish kids, you know, no problem. Mm-hmm. But I think, as far as having someone so that I constantly like talk with and constantly like, you know, became in communication with and technically live with, yeah, he was probably the first. And, you know, for us, like, it wasn't, you know what I'm saying, that didn't even come up, you know, the whole Muslim and Jewish never came up, you know, at the time we're just kids trying to get to, you know, mat drills and class.
Right.
And things like that. So, you know, that never really came into play. It never really affected us ever in our relationship. You know, now that we're older, you know, we talk about it and, you know what I'm saying? We try to, you know, understand each other's views and opinions all the time. You know what I'm saying? Now that we're older about it, but growing up, not really growing up, but at our time at Virginia, you know, that was never something that came up as far as, you know, something that would always, you know, that would wow us or that we thought, you know, would cause friction.
Mm-hmm. Have you had a chance to being in Detroit and being very active there? Have you've had a chance to engage with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib?
Yeah, I've talked to her a little bit, you know, on the front end of voting and her, you know, she does a lot of, you know, front work as far as being an organizer and getting out there and making sure people are voting and registered to vote and really being in touch with people. You know, she's a Palestinian American. And, you know, I'm saying very rare in our congressional system, in our Congress system, as far as having that representation of the Palestinian people there. So, you know, I always support her right off the bat. And she's always, you know, preached always, you know, solid things and solid morals and core values, you know, to her people and being in touch with the community. For me, was something I always admired about her, because she really is going door to door and checking on people and really trying to be in touch with people and, you know, Detroit being the city that it is and the hardships that it faces, continue to faces year in and year out with everything, man, to have a familiar face who's able to come, you know, put a name to the face and also, you know, make a difference and kind of have your back in a lot of these situations where, you know, she's in a position to speak on a lot of political issues is huge for a lot of people. And that's something I respect a lot about her as well.
Okay. That's dope, yeah. Man. That's dope. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's, you know, to an earlier point you made, realizing that the circles that you are in, the platform that you have, that you can affect change. And yeah, it really is about building your network, you know, because you never know, you know, how people will play into your life at some point, good, bad, or indifferent down the road, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, being, you know, being able to, you know, it's something that I try to teach kids now, that it's so important to build that network, man, because you just don't know. All of a sudden you're applying for a job or you're going after a grant or some money to fund something. And you, the person that you met and had a great impression upon, they're like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with this young man or woman. And you're like, oh yeah, yes, yeah, let me see that. And so suddenly you get moved ahead of the line just because of the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so keep building your network, man. Keep using your voice. You ever get back to UVA?
I haven't been back in a long time, man. I'd love to get back. I really want to take the wife down there and show her, you know, the old stomping grounds, but with COVID and everything like that,
man, it's
not the same. So waiting for hopefully get back to a little normalcy here soon, man, and go take a trip down there. It's been a hot minute since I've been down in Charlottesville, but I would love to, man. I would love to get something down there, you know, that make me come back, some sort of investment.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt, because that's a bop. That's a bop from Detroit, so yeah, 100%. that ain't one state of work.
Yeah, no, it's a good little trip.
Yeah, dude, because would love to definitely get you back on the scene, man, for sure. You know, I'm still doing radio, still loving that. It keeps me around the guys, which is great. You know, I get to mentor some of these guys that want to go to the league that are there and then still realize that, damn, I can still call T-Cub and he answer the phone and he gonna give me advice and he just want me to be great. And that's it. That's all we want from the dudes. And, you know, it makes me feel good, man, when guys do reach out and they may find themselves in a situation they weren't in life where they thought they'd be, but you know, they'll say, well, man, I'm thinking about doing this. I'm like, all right, well, yo, let's put a plan in place. Let's start working on some stuff. And then they start seeing things move and they're like, damn, he called me back. He said this and he's going to hold me accountable. And boom. But that's how it works, man. You know, that I try to emphasize to them, this brotherhood is lifelong. You know, when we wear those same colors, we are alumni. We are brothers for life. Yeah, and it doesn't change, you know. Yeah, right. And so, you know, that's
even
that's
guys kind that of, transfer.
Huh?
I said, even, yeah, guys, even guys that happen to transfer.
Yeah. Sure. Facts. So man, it's been great chopping it up with you. And as we wind it up, we end our session with our episode with a segment called Shut the Hell Up, I'm Underdog. And what that is, something that pisses you off. But you're like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to overcome it anyway. Holla at us.
Something that pisses me off, but I'm going to overcome it anyways, is people's notions. I will say that. I know I touched on that a little earlier. Mm-hmm. But, you know, coming out, everyone had their opinion about strength of weaknesses in the drafts. Coming out, even once I got to the league, I didn't say anything. Everyone had an opinion about me and my political views. Coming out, even though I didn't do anything wrong, I was attacked. So for me, at the end of the day, everyone's opinions just happen to be nothing more than gas. And when I mean gas, nothing more than no substance to it, something that maybe makes you feel uncomfortable for a hot second, but when you learn to release it, you're gone and you're onto a better pasture. And I think having that tough skin as far as not letting people's opinions, and just realizing people's opinions, everyone's got an opinion, but when you start to value people's opinions who don't have any stake in the game, who don't have any relationship or any sort of history to relate to any situation you're in, that's something you got to just roll off your shoulders. And that's something you got to continue to work on. Is it always going to be easy? No, but at the end of the day, it's something that's a must for you to continue to keep your health, your mental health, sharp and keep your ducks in order as far as knowing who you are and not allowing someone who's sitting behind a computer to kind of push a notion on you or a narrative on you or make you believe something that you're not.
Man, that's powerful.
And there you have it.
Because we're gonna get away from the norms. That's basically what you're telling you.
Exactly.
Everyone got an opinion about something, and that's the freedom that comes with social media, but at the end of the day, man, there's no credibility, a lot of behind a lot of shit that's being said. And I think just because people got a blue check, don't make it official. Just because people got a lot of followers, don't make it official. You know what I'm saying? What makes it official is what you got inside, man. And I think that's the truth till the end of time.
Damn, that's it, bro. That to thine own self be true, man. That's one of my favorite quotes. And you know, it's something that I preach to my daughters, and it's like, look, at the end of the day, never stray away from who you are at your core. Yeah. Never stray away, because ultimately you look in the mirror and say to yourself, I am enough in everything that I do. I'm enough. Yeah. And if you, I'm not the one that you should underestimate, though. Don't doubt me, because I'll prove you wrong every fucking time.
100%. Subconsciously, you know, especially nowadays, they build this image against you without you even realizing, right? If you look different, if you're a different size, if you eat something differently, if you do things a different way, you automatically start to put yourself in an image of what you're not as opposed to what you are. You know what I'm saying? And that's something over time where people think, oh man, that's whatever. But it builds up, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And for me, being going into year 9 now, you know what I'm saying? I could see over the years how the image of what people should be compared to what people are could really mess with somebody's mentals. You know what I'm saying? True. At the end of the day, that's something, you know what I'm saying, to always be cognizant of as far as, you know, knowing who you are and being okay with who you are, because that, you know, that's your path. You know what I'm saying? That's your life. So,
yeah, just flat out, I'm not going to be who you want me to be.
I play different. I play different. I look different. I'm different.
There it is.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you got to let them know. Like Jay-Z say, what I eat don't make you shit. So, you know, back the fuck up off me.
Bars.
Real rap. Well, fam, this has been an absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much, dude. Dude, we got to stay in better contact, fam.
Yeah, 100%, man. I got the same number, man. I appreciate you guys for having me on here.
No doubt, man.
Anytime, fam. We're going to be following. That ain't never stopped. So,
no, that'll never stop.
I see when you holler on Twitter, I laugh. I'd be like, oh shit, that was dope. Uh-huh. You know,
I'd be on there snapping, but try not to snap, man.
It's hard, man.
I just use a popcorn emoji, make
a gift like you're eating popcorn. And
I gotta remind myself sometimes I still need a job at the end of the day. So
right,
yeah, yeah.
No doubt.
I appreciate it, fellas, man. It was good talking to you guys.
Hey, man, you take care of yourself, fam. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year. This has been the lockdown, the first of 2021. Many more to come. I am T. Cub. The Ball Hawk is here.
Uh-huh.
And we are